friends, as you have just heard, I'm going to read to you from my book on meditation. It is called A Yoga of Light. And on the first page, one finds the affirmation, voluntarily imprisoned within you as light is an omnipotent power. Set it free. Let the light shine. At the heart of the cosmos, then, there is one divine being. That one has its sanctuary and shrine in the heart of every human being. So, man's first major spiritual discovery in consciousness is of this divine presence within him, the inner ruler immortal, seated in the hearts of all beings. Thereafter, identity with the one alone, fully conscious absorption therein, like water in water, space in space, light in light, is achieved. The successful yogi dwells forevermore in the eternal, self-existent all. And this, friends, is man's ultimate evolutionary goal. And regular, wisely directed meditation can hasten its attainment. And this is now our subject. The first objective, therefore, in meditation is to discover one's own spiritual selfhood as distinct from the personal vehicles, our physical body, the emotional and mental vehicles, and the consciousness which is active within them. Devotees of a certain temperament, everybody might not be helped by this method, of course, but certain devotees begin with a deliberate exercise in dissociation from the bodies, seeking both to realize the distinction between the immortal ego and its mortal personal vehicles, and then, of course, consciously to know the spiritual self. The second objective is to realize that the spiritual self of man is forever an integral part of the spiritual self of the universe, the all-pervading supreme deity in universe and in man, the solar logos. In his spiritual nature, man, it is taught, is one with God, and through him with all that lives. Man's spirit and God's spirit are one spirit. And to know this truth of truths, friends, transforms life. May I repeat it? It is so important. Man's spirit and God's spirit are one spirit. And to know this truth of truths transforms life. The discovery of the Godhead within one and of its unity with the Godhead in all, these two discoveries are experiences in elevated consciousness, and the positive use of the creative imagination in meditation can help one to gain those experiences. the dissociation of oneself from these bodies is therefore followed by affirmations of the unity of man with God. These affirmations, as you'll hear soon, these affirmations can lead the devotee into silent contemplation and deepening experience of unity with the all-pervading and transcendent deity, the nameless, selfless one alone. This actually, friends, this is the goal to which one aspires as one meditates. Spiritual achievement by one man, moreover, makes easier and brings nearer the same achievement by all men. And this is another part of the motive for meditation. For when one individual becomes illumined, the person next to them lights up. So closely are we all linked together. Realization of this fact provides part of the motive in yoga. The would-be yogi is, however, also insistently, inwardly impelled. There comes a time in the life and in the mind of the aspirant when, for him or for her, as the Upanishad puts it, there is no other path at all to go. This, my booklet from which I am reading and talking a little, A Yoga of Light, is offered as preliminary guidance. Eventually, of course, each one finds his or her own way, but I offer preliminary guidance to those who seek a systematic procedure in consciousness by a well-tried and quite safe method. Now let me describe the method to you. It can be used in both group meditation or in personal yoga practice. In either case, there are certain rules which had better be followed, and so the leader of a group would probably say to them all, as they sit round quietly, body relaxed, emotions harmonized, mind alert and charged with will, the center of awareness established in the higher self, the spiritual soul, the immortal individuality. Then one leads to the practice of dissociation, with suitable pauses, of course, when guiding a group. The leader will say, mentally affirm and realize, I am not the physical body, I am the spiritual self. I am not the emotions, I am the spiritual self. I am not the mind, I am the spiritual self. This, after a time, leads to the meditation, again by affirmation, led by the leader, who says, I am the divine self, immortal, eternal. radiant with spiritual light. I am that eternal self of light. That am I. The self in me is one with the self in all. I am that self in all. That self am I. I am that. That am I. Then, of course, follows the necessary complete silence as one follows those directions. Eventually, however, there must come, of course, a closing. And this, please remember, should always be quite gradual. If only to be sure that the fruits of the meditation will be brought into the personal mind. So, the leader says, bring the center of awareness into the formal mind, now illumined and responsive to intuition. Then, into the emotions, irradiated by spiritual light. And then, into the body, empowered by spiritual will, inwardly vitalized, and self-recollected throughout the whole of the day. During that day, there should always be remembered the divine presence in the heart, the inner ruler immortal, seated in the hearts of all beings. That brings the actual direction of a group and even a personal meditation to a close. But may I again say, do not rise and cease too readily, too quickly. Take time to relax the mind and gradually permit the uplifting effect of the meditation to extend into the next necessary activities of the day. If, of course, one is meditating alone, friends, then one would follow the same procedure in one's own private, self-directed meditation. Such, then, briefly repeated to you, is a method of meditation suitable both for groups and for individuals. Now, may I offer a commentary on this approach? Remembering, for example, that full success in meditation is governed by certain laws if the two objectives are sought and are to be attained. These two objectives are, as I have already said, egoic consciousness and realization of oneness with the Supreme Lord and life of the universe. Now, this dual and very great achievement is indeed governed by certain fixed laws, which really must be obeyed if full success is to be obtained. Well, what are these rules, then? Well, first of all, regularity. Whilst engagement in meditation for a few weeks under a certain inspiration is naturally very valuable, the great goals are only attained when the practice is continued regularly throughout one's life. Then again, privacy, freedom from intrusion. These are very necessary, as is obvious. Sudden intrusion into the room, for example, perhaps a noisy one, when one is very much withdrawn and abstracted, this can be quite a shock. And furthermore, one will tend to try to meditate as if with half an ear on the door, should I say. Therefore, friends, real privacy, if attainable, is helpful. Then, of course, complete bodily relaxation, without which the consciousness cannot wholly free itself from the entanglement in the physical brain and body. That's where it lives, and that's where it is active during the waking hours. And so we must relax the body if consciousness is to be free. Therefore, quite deliberately, as a regular practice, an art, if you like, every nerve and every muscle should be completely relaxed and the body be as comfortable and at ease as far as possible. Relaxation is to meditation what the engagement of the first two hooks of the zipper is to its closure. If those first two hooks engage, it will zip. If they do not engage, it will never zip. Similarly, physical relaxation is essential to the flight of the soul. Then what about the breathing, concerning which so much is written and taught? Breathing, I suggest, should be slowed down to about one-third or one-half of the normal rate. In practice, however, this generally becomes automatic as the meditation proceeds. Then, of course, posture must be considered. The positions which in Sanskrit are referred to as asanas, or bodily postures, must be considered. And in one form of yoga, called hatha yoga, they are very deeply considered. Posture, however, should permit added measures of the serpent fire, or kundalini, and prana, the vital life force, to flow from the sacrum along the spinal cord into the brain, which will become vivified by both of them, and so responsive to interior experiences. The straight spine, then, is important, and the body should be erect, and the spine kept straight for full success. The Egyptian position is very suitable for Westerners. You remember how the gods and the priests are shown as seated, often on a kind of cubic seat. The soles of the feet are flat on the ground, and the shins and thighs form a square, and so does the spinal column form a square with the thighs, the head being erect. That is really a very good and quite a comfortable and relaxed position. By the by, friends, any head pain is one warning of error in technique, which should be corrected before continuing. Probably the error is one of failure to be completely relaxed. There may be faulty posture, however. The head may fall forward or to one side or be leaning back. It is really very important that the spine and neck should be completely straight. Then, our emotions. The astral nature needs to be harmonious and calm. This is obvious, isn't it? For friction, tension, and discordant emotions can also prevent the flight of the soul from the restrictions of the body and quite seriously inhibit freedom of consciousness. So much then for the body and the feelings, but then the mind comes into the operation very markedly, and at first, during response to the affirmations, the mind must be alert and the will positive, quite positive. Otherwise, there can follow a kind of dreamy imaginativeness, which can be mistaken for spiritual experience. Actually, such dreaminess is the veritable antithesis of real yogic illumination. So, friends, these rules obeyed, and by these means, the threefold personal nature is brought to a condition in which its imprisonment of consciousness is reduced to a minimum. This, however, is not wholly sufficient, and consciousness in its turn must deliberately free itself. The practice of dissociation from the bodies is followed by the direction to attain spiritual awareness, very much like this. Here the director or leader would be saying, the center of awareness is established in the higher self, the spiritual soul, the immortal ego. The leader therefore continues, mentally affirm and realize, I am not the physical body, I am the spiritual self. I am not the emotions, I am the spiritual self. I am not the mind, I am the spiritual self. And at this point, friends, in creative imagination, the center of observation, of awareness, of I-ness, this center is withdrawn from the physical brain and focused in the spiritual individuality, or ego. Similarly, also, the consciousness is withdrawn from the emotional and mental bodies and centered in the vehicle of consciousness at the level of abstract thought in which the immortal ego abides. Later on, of course, by practice, this last need not become necessary. However, regular practice and repetition is advised, always with full intent and strong determination. We are advised always to allow the positive imagination to have full play, and this will help us to transfer the whole concentration of awareness and existence from our mortal to our immortal selves, right into the spiritual nature of man. There then follows an attempted ascent higher or more, or a descent more deeply still. So the leader continues, I am the divine self, immortal, eternal. And attempt is made to realize the self as pure spiritual will. The leader continues, radiant with spiritual light. Here, friends, it is helpful to think of oneself as a center of pure white light, radiating throughout the universe. Identifying oneself in consciousness with that divine light, the devotee then affirms, I am that eternal self of light. That self am I. Regular practice by this method eventually enables one to achieve this transference of consciousness from physical, emotional, and mental levels to higher mental, intuitional, and then to purely spiritual states of awareness. The self is then realized as a radiant center of universal spiritual light, concentrated into a point, as it were, of burning intensity, much perhaps as sunlight may be focused by a lens into a point of brilliant light. Then comes the next step, the movement in consciousness towards the second objective in meditation. And this practice culminates in realization of the unity of one's own spiritual self as light, with the one light, with the one supreme, all-pervading spirit of the universe. Concentration and meditation upon the spiritual self merges then into absorbed contemplation of union with the transcendent and immanent divine self of all. To help, the leader continues, the self in me is one with the self in all. Here, according to temperament, consciousness is directed towards realization of identity of the spirit self in man, with the spirit self in all nature. And this you remember, this is the real goal in all yoga. The realization of the identity of the spirit self in man with the spirit self in all nature. The manifested supreme deity of our universe, the solar logos, our Lord the Sun, may here be thought of with ardent aspiration to realize oneness with him. One may, if so moved, visualize the spiritual heart of the sun itself and of being in union therewith. In consequence, the final affirmation is, I am that, that am I. As this is meditated upon, contemplated, the sense of separated selfhood eventually vanishes. Prolonged, thought-free realization of identity with God, ultimately alone remains. After the preliminary stages of yoga, the formal mind is stilled, and thereafter maintained in, I am quoting, that fixity of mind in which no breeze can waft an earthly thought within. Indeed, thought ceases. Stillness pervades the whole nature, which can become steeped in peace, even though immense expansion and dynamic power are being experienced at the very highest, most spiritual levels of human awareness. As much time as can be spared should then be spent in mind-free contemplation of unity with God, and through him or that, unity with the spirit self in all that lives. When, at last, meditation must cease, it is very important to return to the brain consciousness by the same route which was followed on the inward journey. One reason for this is that channels between the lower, outer self and the inner, higher self are being opened by concentrated effort, and therefore should be used in both the ascent and the return of consciousness. For by this means, they are both widened and they are kept open. Another reason for returning through the mental and emotional bodies is that it is eminently desirable to bring the full fruits of spiritual experience into the personal vehicles and consciousness, thereby enlightening and purifying the outer self and quickening its evolution. This is a third objective in meditation, to quicken the evolution of the bodies of mind, emotion, and flesh by a powerful descent or outward flow of spiritual force and experience. As a result of regular meditation, one finds it possible to discover one's center of awareness and the level at which it is usually operating, as also, of course, to be able to place it in any one of the vehicles of consciousness at will. Success in meditation demands good control of this movement of one's center of life and consciousness. Then we come to the actual process towards the close of the meditative procedure by bringing the center of awareness into the formal mind and regarding it or visualizing it as now illumined and sensitive, responsive to the intuition. After a suitable pause, this instruction is taken into the realm of the emotions, which are in their turn regarded as irradiated by spiritual light. Then, by a strong effort of will, a shaft of pure white spiritual fire is brought down from within to transfix the astral body as by a spear. Such spiritualization of the emotional vehicle causes the coarser material and the otherwise undesirable emotional states to be given out by the more powerful spiritual forces. They are, as it were, outbalanced rather than given out by the more powerful spiritual forces. Then, and finally, as we draw near to the close of this kind of meditation, awareness is focused in the physical body itself. And this should be done quite deliberately. We should place the center of consciousness in the middle of the head, where it normally is felt to be. The powers of the triple self are then brought down into the body. And a leader would say, continuing the advice to bring the center of the awareness from spiritual towards the more material parts of one's nature into the body, empowered now by spiritual will. This implies that the fire of the God Self in man gradually and increasingly becomes established in the physical personality. There it occupies the throne, as it were, as an irresistible will force, always available in waking consciousness. A very valuable result of meditation, but not the only one, for the leader would continue that the body is inwardly vitalized. And at these words, the spiritual life, the one life of the Logos of the universe, is visualized as flooding and filling the whole physical body. This may then be thought of, visualized if you like, as charged with the golden life and light of God himself, vividly alive, and by the by, often with much benefit to the physical health. As a result of these linking the inner effects with the outer consciousness, the higher mind applies the control to the lower mind and to the emotions and to the body. And these are to be continued. As the leader says, self-recollected throughout the day. What exactly does self-recollected or self-recollection mean? A very important aspect of the spiritual and the contemplative life, friends. Self-recollection means that one first forms the habit of continually referring the mind from the purely material interests and activities to the inward spiritual self, and as far as possible, holding it there. Eventually, it is taught, this becomes habitual, so that the two can almost continue together. Whilst active, and of course efficiently active here, more so than ever as a yogi, nevertheless, one part of one's consciousness is in the divine presence all the time. You may perhaps remember the words of that wonderful yogi known to us as Brother Lawrence. He was a cripple who, as a monk, worked in the kitchen of one of the French monasteries in the Middle Ages, and he attained to this perpetual self-recollection, or as he called it, the presence of God. And he wrote, "It makes no difference to me whether I am in the kitchen or near the refectory serving the meals or kneeling at the altar at the time of receiving the sacrament, for I am just as much conscious of the divine presence then as always." So wrote Brother Lawrence, whose books I recommend. He also wrote, the words occur to me, something like this: those who have become possessed by the gale of the Holy Spirit progress onwards even in sleep. So his two books are The Practice of the Presence of God and, very valuable, Spiritual Maxims. So this idea of being self-recollected throughout the day, calm, poised, mindful, and rooted in the eternal, is most valuable for us all. To bring this about, we are helped by the closing words of the meditative thought, which are, remembering the divine presence in the heart, the inner ruler immortal, seated in the hearts of all beings. There we are enjoined never to forget. this divine presence, the spirit self of each one of us, is in our own hearts, not only of our own selves, but of all beings. By the by, that phrase, the inner ruler immortal, seated in the hearts of all beings, is taken from a Hindu scripture. One of the disciples or followers of the Lord Sri Krishna was gazing upon him in his physical body and suddenly was transported into the reality and said or affirmed, "Thou art not the Lord Sri Krishna, thou art the inner ruler immortal, seated in the hearts of all beings." In itself, this practice of self-recollection is quietening and peace-giving. It keeps the consciousness centered in interior reality, and thereafter never wholly absorbed in the external transitory world. Remember, friend, that one should never break or emerge from meditation suddenly. To do so might produce a shock to the nervous system, and in any case will result in a quick casting aside and partial loss of the deep inner experience. This, obviously, should always be avoided. And ideally, one should withdraw gradually from the meditative state, reaffirm perhaps the great resolves before taking up the duties of the day. In their fulfillment, the daily life should conform as closely as possible to the accepted spiritual ideals. Friends, I am now about to conduct group meditation. And you will notice that I shall leave sufficient pauses in silence, during which, according to temperament, one may seek realization. These periods may, of course, be lengthened or shortened to suit personal idiosyncrasies. I will, however, grant an average period of time. Now we begin to meditate together. Body relaxed, emotions harmonized, mind alert and charged with will, the center of awareness to be established in the higher self, the spiritual soul, the immortal individuality. Mentally affirm and realize, I am not the physical body, the emotions, or the mind. I am the spiritual self. I am the divine self, immortal, imperishable, eternal, radiant with spiritual light, I am that eternal self of light. That self am I. The self that I am is one with the self in all. I am that self in all. That am I. I am that. That am I. Drawing the meditation to a close, which should always be gradual, bring the center of awareness first into the formal mind, now illumined and responsive to intuition. Then into the emotions, now irradiated by spiritual light. Then bring the center of awareness into the body. Now empowered by spiritual will, inwardly vitalized, and always spiritually self-recollecting, remembering the divine presence in the heart, the inner ruler immortal, seated in the hearts of all beings. Before rising, take time to relax the mind and gradually to permit the uplifting effects of the meditation to extend into the necessary activities of the day. Thereafter, this group meditation is closed.